Blog Talk Radio.
You miss me? I miss all of y'all. Hey. All y'all girls standing together like that. Keep shaking.
GP family, thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Ashley Goodman, and this is the BYGP Locker Room Show. Tonight, I'll be speaking with Mr. Lamont Hundley. Lamont was ranked number 50 greatest Arizona Wildcats of all time as a linebacker. He and his older brother, Ricky, were both dynamite defensive players at Arizona, and both went off to have an NFL career. So we're going to patch him in. Hey, Lamont, you with us?
I'm sure he is. Thank you for having me this afternoon.
Absolutely, and I appreciate you taking the time to speak with us and our audience. Now, I've told you this last time I talked to you, but we are geared towards 13- to 19-year-old football players who are aspiring to get to that next level and play some college ball. And so we thought you would be well worth, you know, bringing on and hearing what your recruiting, you know, journey was like and your thoughts about the whole football process. So let's get down right into it. What was your childhood like? Like, where did you grow up and how was your dynamics with your siblings and your parents?
Well, I grew up in a little small city in Virginia called Petersburg. It's like 30 minutes south of the big city of Richmond, very small town, about 40,000 people, where everyone knew everyone, and that kind of like kept us in line, I think, in regards to if we did something wrong, we knew that the preacher, the teacher, and everyone else was going to let our mom know what went on.
Yeah.
So as far as growing up in that type of a family, you know, one person took care of one another. The oldest brother or the oldest sister was always in charge. So I always had upper brothers and sisters was always in charge of me, in which the younger had always had to listen, which, you know, was a grateful thing on my end of it, because I did have some great siblings that was older than me that guided my direction in life and showed me some things that I probably would have seen if they weren't there for us.
Yeah, so then how many siblings did you have?
We had six brothers and three sisters, and I'm in the middle of the boys. And I'm like the seesaw, so I'm right there in the middle of my oldest and my youngest brothers. So I got to see both ends of the pendulum, so to speak. So I was kind of like knew what to do and what not to do from the older and the youngest one. So.
Well, that's a good place to be, you know.
Yes, it was.
So did your parents and your siblings, did they have high expectations for one another and what you guys did, you know, do off and on the field?
You know, first of all, we was raised by a single mom. Our mother's he was basically the mother and the father in the household. And we was... You know, we didn't call her mother. We called her Scarlett, and that's her given name. And she allowed us to call her by her first name. And she said, you know, it doesn't matter to me what you call me, as long as you respect me. So we grew up, we called her by her first name, and that respect was there. Me personally growing up, seeing what my mother went through as far as raising kids by herself, and, you know, disciplining us and putting clothes on our backs, feeding us, doing all these different things, I personally was kind of, you know, afraid to disappoint her because I saw the hardship she was going through, the things she was going through. So I said to myself, I mean, why would I give her some additional hardship, you know, as far as placing any more guilt on her that she already has? So I tried my best, you know, to, if she told me to go home and do your homework or sit in this corner, that's exactly what I did as a kid, and most of us did as kids and stuff. And, you know, so it's been a great lesson for me right now as an adult, because I basically see things and treat my kids the same way. So at this, growing up that way, you know, it was a really, really strong lesson for me. As far as expectations, she did. She put great expectations on each one of her kids. My mom never, she didn't graduate from high school till later on in her adult life. And then she wanted all of us to make sure we go to high school and graduate from high school, but she wanted every kid to go to college just as well. You know, some of us took that on and some of us didn't. Some of my siblings went different directions and whatnot. But one of my oldest sister, her name is Debbie, and she's probably, you know, my role model in life. I mean, I just looked up to this young lady so much. And she was the first person in our household, in our family, to go to college and take college on. And she took it on in regards to working herself through college. There was no aid as far as from our household, or my mom could help, so she had to do everything herself. So so Debbie was the first one to really break that barrier in regards to my mother, siblings, and anyone beyond her to ever have an opportunity to go to college. So, and she took it on. And then at that point in time, you know, Ricky and myself, we came after that. So we had athletics to give us an opportunity to get to the next level as far as college. And that was there for us. And even growing up at that, growing up not knowing that there was actually an enroll or an opportunity by playing sports to take you to the next level. Again, having, you know, a brother like Ricky in front of me who was gifted, very athletic, and, you know, and when you're that way, you find a lot of schools, you find a lot of, even some cases, pro teams, because he was drafted to play professional basketball, baseball, I'm sorry. You find those people come around, and when those people come around, you start learning things, you start gathering things. So in the process of what Ricky was going through as far as colleges and people looking at him, an opportunity to go to college, my junior year or my sophomore year, I realized, well, you know, if I can, you know, get my heads out there and do a few things and get noticed, I may have these same opportunities. And those opportunities were given to me, and I said to myself, as a high school student athlete, I said to myself, wherever Ricky go, if I'm good enough to go to the same university that he chooses, that's where I'm going to school. And he made the choice to come here to University of Arizona, and at that time, I was good enough to come here just as well. So they gave me the opportunity as a scholarship to come here the next year.
That is some great stuff right there. I love that. You know, even through your mom just working her butt off to help you guys out, and to just have that right, your sister and Ricky as well. Just having that, you know, family and that tightness to get one another on the right track, that's fantastic, and I love that story. I was actually going to ask you what made Arizona fit for you, but I think you completely answered my question on that. Was there any other options besides Arizona that you were looking at?
I was blessed that, you know, being back east in Virginia area, you got the ACC schools schools that I had choices of, North Carolina, the North Carolina States, the Maryland's, the schools of those natures to go. But I had already made my mind up, and actually, you know, just reflect back when Ricky was being recruited, especially the ACC schools, I would go on his recruiting trips with him. You know, so when he goes, so my junior year, I would go with him on these trips. So it gave me an opportunity a year ahead to see what, you know, recruiting was all about, and seeing the inside, you know, at a younger age. So it gave me that opportunity. So my mind was made up, you know, and like I say, I was good enough and blessed enough to where the University of Arizona thought that I could fit in at their program. So my junior year, I told them, if you guys want me, I commit it right now. And I committed after my into my junior year, going to my senior year, I committed, and I didn't really go on any recruiting trips at all. I just decided to go ahead and make Arizona my home.
That is amazing. So I'm assuming Ricky had already accepted the offer and he was already on his way to Arizona before.
Ricky was here and he had a very good year, his first year here, and he enjoyed it. He enjoyed the mm-hmm. atmosphere. He enjoyed the people that was here, and you know, everybody opened up their arms and welcomed him to this community. And like I say, he let me know what it was all about. And I never had, came west in my life until I came out here on my true recruiting trip, which was in the month of November. And it was kind of cold back home. I mean, it didn't get crazy cold, but it was kind of cold back home. And got here, it was like 70 degrees. And,
I
had jeans on. Nice dry heat. I had jeans on and stuff, and I had to change into some shorts, and I was like, well, how can you not stay here?
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a plus to have the sunshine. Was your mom, was she disappointed? Well, probably she couldn't be disappointed that you guys both got scholarships, but was she able to make many games out there?
She came to, I think she came to one game a year through our whole careers. And maybe our senior year, his senior year, she might have came to multiple games, maybe one or two. But it is. I mean, it was kind of hard for her to be able to come out here. And then on the other disappointing side of it, when we was out here to go to school, I think going into my sophomore season, we ended up being on probation. So they took all the TV rights from us. So we couldn't be shown on TV or anything like that. So that was removed from us, and then I think my senior year we was back on TV, and they got the people back home finally got to see us play on television again.
Wow, that is mm-hmm. disappointing for her. I'm sure she was very happy.
Well, actually, growing up as a kid, my mom really didn't want us to play football. She hated us playing football. She couldn't stand it because we'd get hurt, and she didn't want her baby to be hurt. And again, the dynamics of the mentality of the lifestyle we lived in, my mom had no idea that there was opportunity playing any sport to advance mm-hmm. yourself as a person. So she just felt like it was, we out there playing sandlot football like we always do and sandlot sports, and we get hurt. And then in the process of getting hurt, that mean I got to sit in the emergency room with you and have to deal with that. So she didn't care for us playing football, especially. And at one point when Ricky first started playing, Ricky, when he started a year for me when he was like 7, 8 years old, and he would hide his equipment from my mom. And he wouldn't bring the helmet to children at a friend's house. He would take it to a friend's house, leave it there, and then he'll go over there after school, put the clothes, his uniform on, go practice, and take it off at the friend's house
How long did he do that for?
A whole year.
How long did he do that?
A whole year. Yes, he did. And then the next year, I decided to play ball, and she realized there was something I guess we wanted to do, so she kind of brought into the program.
That's very funny. Well, he's mm-hmm. very good for hiding it for 1 year. That's very
yeah, exactly. Yeah, he didn't get beat up too bad, so that's the reason why it was like she didn't know. I think one time he twisted his elbow or something, his wrist or something. So he had explained that to him. He said he fell on the playground at school or something like that. So
yeah. Well, did you, as a younger brother and siblings and whatnot, did you ever have, any challenges such as jealousy, expectations, the self-identity being under Ricky, or did that feel something, having Ricky as that person to look up to and see his path, did that help you out?
Having him in front of me, him as well as some of my other older siblings in front of me, mm-hmm. It allowed me to mold myself as far as figuring out my direction and what I wanted to choose. And I don't know, maybe it's just a personality trait that I have in me, but I never felt, you know, any animosity or jealousy or anything towards any of my siblings, as far as especially what they was doing, it was positive. I never felt that. I never had that in my soul. And people will always ask me, especially with Ricky being my older brother and the accolades and the career he has had, you know, I'm like, you know, how can you not be or want to be compared to somebody great like that? You know, go and compare me to that person. You know, it's better than comparing you to a bum or somebody on the street corner. You know, so and if I can just get just a little bit of what they have, I feel like I'm a complete person, you know. So those things, I always try to, you know, keep that in perspective as far as knowing what I'm capable of doing as a person. Even to this day, I know what I'm capable of doing, and I know my levels and my expectations, and those are things I'm always reach and master.
Mm-hmm.
If I can take some from somebody, I sure will. You know, I sure will do those things. And I was blessed. I tell you, I was so blessed to have, you know, not just a good athlete in a brother, but also a good person in a brother, as well as some of my other siblings, my older sisters. I mean, they would walk me to school and hold my hand and make sure we didn't get in trouble. You know, so when you have that gift of people around you, I mean, how can you not do the right thing?
Yeah, that is definitely key, and it's so great that you do look at it like that. That yes, Ricky was, you know, an outstanding athlete, but like you just said, he was a great person, and to have both of those qualities is something that of course you would be honored to be, you know, even close to being like that. So yeah, that is great. Do you feel that the young athletes today have it a little bit more difficult than you and Ricky did, you know, going through this whole process of the recruiting and you know, just getting to that next level, just with social media and all the hype?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think it in the fact that they think it should be given to them first and foremost. I mean, I think young kids, these young kids these days and time don't feel that they got to work to get. They think that they entitled to everything. The entitlement is there, and I mean I say that about, you know, the kids on the street as well as my kids. You know, they think because of the fact that, you know, I went to school and I graduated, you know, I put a football shoulder pads on, a helmet on, somebody should look at me and somebody should give me opportunity. You know, you make your own opportunities. I mean, you go out and you make them yourself, and you make things happen. You know, again, all this social media that we got, if anything, those kids should use that to their advantage, where they can market themselves and place themselves in a better situation where, you know, these universities, these schools going to say, you know what, I don't want to just get that athlete, but I want to get that quality person. You know, because you can't teach quality when it comes to the soul of the person. You know, so I can always make you a better athlete. You know, if you got any talent, you know, I want to have an opportunity to make you a better athlete, but I can't change your soul. I mean, if you're an idiot or you just don't want to do the right things in life, you're going to carry that trait continue into your grave. But if you got a good soul and you know you're going to do the right thing and you don't want to disappoint yourself as well as other people, I mean, I can't teach that. You know, I want that around me. I mean, me as a man, me as a father, me, even if I'm coaching, I would want that type of a person around me all the time, because that's contagious. And that's how you win. And that's how you create that culture of winning, be it on the football field, be it in life, be it in corporate office, wherever it may be. That's the personality to me to make things happen. Now, granted, if you can take the intangibles that an athlete has and put those qualities together, you got a dynamite soul at that point in time. You got somebody who's really going to be special.
Yeah, and that's not only on the field, you know, that quality,
mm-hmm.
yeah, that quality mm-hmm. then goes into your next career and business
yep.
and family and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the biggest the most difficult for you transitioning from high school to college on and off the field?
My biggest thing was fear, you know, in regards to
okay.
not knowing what was the next step for me. And again,
uh-huh.
you know, and just to give you the comparisons as far as my career versus my brother's career, I mean, Ricky was a number one draft pick, the seventh player picked in the first round. Lamar
yeah.
Hundley was a free agent. I had to make
mm-hmm.
my way and make things happen. But, again, I had no jealousy, no animosity. I just had an opportunity. So
exactly.
going into that opportunity, I had to figure out, okay, what I need to do to try to stick myself on somebody's roster. What the things that I got to do to stand out to make sure these people want me to be a part of this team. And, you know, because all I was just another piece of meat that was going through the line. And if I didn't stick, they got another one just sitting there waiting. You know, so you had to do something to be creative to get those coaches to open their eyes and say, you know what, I need to take a chance on this person. And granted, I remember we was playing Seattle in Indianapolis, and
uh-huh.
and I was scared to death. My first game I ever played, and I lined up, and offensive lineman there was a guy named Reggie McKenzie, who was a blocker
okay.
for O.J. Simpson. He
uh-huh.
was the offensive line for O.J. Simpson, and in the backfield there was another running back. His name was Kurt Warner, not the quarterback. This guy was a running back named Kurt Warner.
Yeah, so, okay.
And I looked through the offensive lineman of Reggie McKenzie and seeing Kurt Warner in the backfield, and I'm like, oh, man, what am I going to do to try to make something happen here? And,
uh-huh.
you know, the first thing, the play was called, but I don't even recall running the same play that was called defensively. But all I said is, man, this man blocking now. So I ran through Reggie McKenzie's head, fell in the backfield, hit Kurt Warner, made the tackle in the backfield, and I said to myself, I made myself an opportunity here. And that right
that's
there was
great.
That's made people look and say, you know what, you may want to give this guy an opportunity and a chance. And the chance was there.
I love it. I love it. Well,
mm-hmm.
you know, the opportunity, once it arrives, you've got to go out and make the plays, and that's exactly what you did. So that
right.
is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there needs to be more in place to educate young players that choices have consequences, such as, you know, Coach Strong laying down the hammer on and kicking several players off the UT roster, you know, coming in first season as head coach?
Oh, yeah. I strongly agree with that. I mean, I applaud a coach that will do that to his team because he's letting them know no player is bigger than the program or even
mm-hmm.
the game itself.
Yeah.
There's no one bigger than the game. So if you make the choices as far as the choices you make in life, you know, there is a consequence that you got to choose. I mean, there's good choices. Let's make those better choices. If we make those best choices, there's reward for it. You make the worst ones, there's consequences that we got to do, and here are the consequences. And you can find very few coaches that's going to step up and hold to what they say, you know. So
yeah.
what Coach Strong has done, he has set a precedent there, and he's telling his kids, you know what, you're not bigger than nothing here. You're not bigger than the university. The only thing I hope is that he stay on that line, and he holds that rope, and he holds true to it. And he don't allow any other player bend one way or another. And if he does that, his program will be very successful.
Absolutely, yeah. I totally agree. And I think, like you said, he definitely made a stance, and he's
mm-hmm.
sticking strong to that. And I applaud him for what he's
yeah.
done. Do
right.
you think? Do you think? Like, what's your thoughts when you hear about former college and professional players that are really, really struggling after football ends? Did you have that same struggle?
You know what? My struggle was, in a way, my struggle was my blessing, I guess, because the fact that I I was one of those that was always on the bubble and living on the bubble in regards to not knowing if I got a job this year or this week or whatever it may be. So when that opportunity came that, you know, there was no more needing me, I had to say, you know what, you know, God putting something else in my lap right now. So, you know, walk away from this game, you know, you're healthy, you're young, and put that same energy and that same force into, you know, something else that you can love for the rest of your life or whatever it may be. Yeah. And, you know, so I walked away from the game after, you know, I was released from the Indianapolis Colts, and, I tried to play with Miami again, and that didn't, you know, pan out, and it just I got to the point that my true blessing was that I was not in a relationship. I didn't have a family. I didn't have kids. I just had me, you know.
Yeah.
So me being able to walk away from it is easier than some guys that play the game that's married and may have kids, and they feel that, you know, I got to keep doing this thing because I got a family to provide for. I can walk away and say, all you got to do is provide for Lamont. You know, you can go find you a 9-to-5 and figure out how to take care of yourself. And and again, that was a blessing on my end of it. So, and that's what I did. And I never left Tucson. I always made Tucson my home in the off season. So, you know, and I did that, you know, with this for selfish reasons, because the game of football, it's the only big show here in town, the University of Arizona. So people still relate to you as that football player that played on Saturday at the University of Arizona, even today. And I've been removed from the game for 30 years. So being here and being rooted in this community, it gave me an opportunity to be able to find something else and latch onto that and run with that and you know, and make a career out of it. And to this day, I've been involved in our exercise equipment business that we've been running for 28 years. The business has been around for 28 years, and we've been part of it for 23 years now. You know, so been a very successful business for us. It's been very good for me, myself, as well as for my family and other people that's part of our team here. And so that's all a blessing of the fact being that, you know, I'm a local boy, so to speak, that's in this community, and people still see me as that athlete that played at the University of Arizona, and they see me as a positive person, hopefully, and they, you know, come in and they purchase equipment and give us opportunity to provide and service them. And, I've been a very blessed man, and to this point in my life, I come to work and I'm part of this thing, and I don't look back. You know, I think it's just been a blessing for me. So, you know, walking away from the game was easier for me than some other guys. You know, some other guys, you know, they become institutionalized to the game because that's the only thing they know, and that's the only thing that they can hope and pray to give it to help them in life. And,
exactly.
But there got to be something in place. And, you know, now with all this money that's part of the game, there is some things in place to help a player transition from the game of football or any sport into everyday life. But a lot of the characteristics of the man, if you don't have what it takes, what it is about in your soul as a person or as a man, you know, we can put everything in front of you. It doesn't mean nothing if you can't apply that and make a difference in life. You know,
there's some guys
just can't apply it, you know, and they end up putting themselves in a bad situation as well as other family members.
Well, so that gets me to my next point on that. You just brought up a great, great point for me. What do you think about all the suspensions regarding substance abuse and just, you know, the use of marijuana and whatnot? What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I don't think there's a place for it. And as far as if you're a quality athlete, you're a good athlete, there's no place for any of that stuff in your body, period. At any level or any age, you know, there's no place for it or whatsoever. I think those type of substance that people have a tendency of going towards.
Yeah.
They, in some cases, they grew up around that environment. You know,
uh-huh.
So if you grow up around that environment, it becomes part of your culture.
Yeah.
I personally, as a kid, never saw marijuana. Growing up as an adult, never saw cocaine, drugs. As an adult in locker rooms, I never saw drugs being passed around. I knew it happened, but I never
yeah.
saw it. You know, I recall one time in training camp, I walked out of my room, and there's a guy that doesn't look like he belongs there. He walking down the hall, and he ended up probably doing something with one of the other players to help him enhance his game. But me being the person that I am, those people never have a way of coming around me because they know that I didn't tolerate that stuff. You
mm-hmm.
know, and I think that's an everyday life thing too, I believe. You know, if
yeah.
you look at the marijuana heads and the cocaine user and all those, they have a way of making sure they huddle in their huddle. And guys that don't want to be a part of that, they stay in their huddle. You know,
yeah.
they go different ways in life. So, but there's no, in my personal opinion, there's no place for that stuff in anyone's life, especially an athlete. You know, because I do think that that does shorten your career as far as being an athlete. And there's nothing that you need to enhance yourself to compete against the next man. If you
mm-hmm.
don't have it in your heart, in your soul, and the genetics that it takes from hard work,
yeah.
you don't need that other stuff in your body because all it's going to do is it's going to cripple you or ruin you later in life.
How do you feel the commissioner has handled the Ray Rice issue and overall his position as the NFL commissioner?
Well, what is Ray Rice stuff has been a mess, I'll tell you one thing.
It definitely
you know,
has.
I could tell you one thing as far as growing up in a household where, you know, the mother was the mother and the father, and I have so much respect for my mom and other females is in my life, there's no reason for a man to even place his hand on a female. There's no reason whatsoever. I mean, it's quicker and faster to turn around and walk away than laying your hand on a female. It's just how it is in life. Now, as far as Ray himself and what took place, I think the judicial, I can't even say the word, the judicial system, I can't even
yeah.
say it, I'm sorry. You know what I
you're
mean?
You're good.
The court system,
yes.
I apologize. I think the court system failed
yes.
this situation, okay? I think the court system that's in that community basically
mm-hmm.
saw a guy that they see on Sunday who's a hero on the field, and they place this guy in a situation where they say, okay, we know you did wrong, but if you do this and this and this, we'll forgive you. And based
yeah.
on that parameters, the bosses of bosses, he got to look back and say, well, dang, they did that. I mean, I can't kick this guy out of the lead now. I can't take, you know, 8 games from him, but I got to do something.
Even though with the evidence, though, even though with the video?
Yeah, I think that it was already set in regards to when the court system did what they did. I think that
mm-hmm.
lies the problem with him trying to make a decision as far as Roger Goodell trying to make a decision what to do with this kid because
yeah.
of how the court system did what they did. You know, so I think the court system failed the female in regards to that. That the court system should have did more.
Uh-huh, and I totally agree with that. Do you think, though, that her, whatever she did say to the commissioner, you know, do you think that she should have had that much pull on what he ultimately then decided on a 2-game suspension?
No, I still think that his mind was made up already based
okay.
on what the court system had done and what they had
okay.
said. You know, you know, and then, you know, on the flip side of it, I say she said what she said and things, you know, as far as her apologies and things like that.
Yeah.
And I wasn't there. No one was there. I really don't know. I don't know the personality of his wife, to be his wife now. But I wasn't married to you when you hit me. So why in the hell am I going to marry you?
Exactly. Thank you. Yes.
Why am I marrying you? You know, I mean, I was engaged to you. That was my out right there.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, so if a person's like that going to do what he do, you know, married or not married, if they place your hand on you once, they may do it again. So I think it's important this young lady get some help.
Yeah.
You know, and realize that, you know, this person's sick as well as she may be a sick person to stay around that situation.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. And I wanted to just make sure that, you know, listeners out there, you know, this goes both ways. It's just not a male hitting a female. It is vice versa. I wouldn't say, you know, it never happens. Yes, predominantly it is males that hit females, but it
mm-hmm.
should not happen either way.
So I didn't want to make that clear.
Let me end with this last question for you before I let you go. Now,
mm-hmm.
you know, with all your years as you know, a business owner, now as a man, your NFL career, your college career, what would be one piece of advice that you would tell a young Lamont?
I would express to myself or that young person is to
mm-hmm.
make sure you surround yourself with quality people. Okay, make sure you surround yourself. Be around people who you would want to be, you know, as far as identify with yourself. Pull your inner self out and place that person right there and say, this is the type of personality that I will want to be around. You know,
mm-hmm.
if, you know, thugs follow thugs, good people follow good people. You know, so if you as a person growing up and you want to make a difference in life, just surround yourself around the, you know, the in some cases the nerds that's around, you know, the people who are doing quality things when it comes to in the classroom, you know, quality athletes, the athletes that stand away from the drugs and all those different things, you know, find a mentor, find somebody who's been there, who has done it, and
mm-hmm.
have that person show you the ropes. You know, we as people, we always can learn from someone. I don't care how old or young we are, we always can learn from someone. But find somebody who's out there who don't mind, you know, reaching his hand or her hand out to you to say, hey, you know what, I've been around that corner, and I can tell you what's around that corner before you get there. But
yeah.
at least let me tell you, and then once you get around that corner, you can make your decision. But at least you know what to expect. You know,
yeah,
so,
exactly.
You know,
that
so
is,
we
that
we
is
could
great stuff.
Mhm. So if we can get kids to kind of think that way, then you know, hopefully we can have a successful future here with young people.
Absolutely, and not only on the field but off the field
off
as
the
well.
Field.
Yeah.
Right. Well, off the field more important than on, because everybody's not going to be on the field. Everybody's not going to be on the field, and you know, take the game as far as you can take it. You know, because the game going to take as much as it is from you. And so
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever you can get, parlay it to your advantage and get what you can get out of it. And I honestly say I did that, you know, because I stayed here in Tucson for those reasons, because I know people still see me as number 98 running up and down the field playing football. Mm-hmm.
Well, that's definitely a good reason to stay, you know, in Tucson, and you love it, and everyone, you know,
mm-hmm.
sounds like you have a great support system. So, Lamont,
mm-hmm.
thank you so much for coming on and speaking with me and our audience. We definitely appreciate it.
No, no problem. It was a pleasure, and I hope someone got something from this few words, and good luck to you guys, and God bless everybody.
Thank you so much. We'll talk
All
to you
right.
soon.
Bye-bye.
We hope listening to Lamont speak about his journey and thoughts on issues was helpful for your own career. We have some great things going on with BYGP right now. We are holding a recruiting seminar August 9th in Santa Maria, California. So please check that out at beforeyougopro.com for more information on that. Also, if you've not checked out our book, you definitely need to do that. As Tuesday, tune in at 6:30 p.m. We will be speaking with Demetric Evans. Demetric played defensive end at University of Georgia and played 10 years in the NFL. He currently is a consultant mentor at NFL Player Association, and he's working with a lot of young athletes just like yourself. This is Ashley Goodman signing off with BYGP and the rest of the BYGP team. Have a good night, guys.
This one, very strong. Very strong. It was well done on his part, on this thing. And it flowed really nice. Yeah, it kind of just went into, you know, what you left off with, like, your focus on the it was fantastic. So, yeah, I was really excited. Yeah.